You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMC Channel 157. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss. Ben, the research bear. Matt Doyle is like selling his car or something. He's preparing to move to New York, and Bobby Warshaw is literally in a moving van on his way to New York.
Do people own cars anymore?
Not in New York City.
Not in New York City.
Out in the Octagon in Berkeley, it was a requirement. That's all changing. The world of Extra Time Radio is changing, and not just because we're adding a few new faces to the fold. I guess it's just Bobby. So one new face.
Who's not really a new face.
He's a newish face. I mean, he's been like a trialist in the past.
He's going from a person, you know, you play.
We've made the signing.
10 minutes a game, maybe up to 30 minutes.
Yeah. So is he what kind of signing is Bobby in MLS terms for Extra Time Radio?
I think it's
Yeah, that's how that's.
I was going to say he's clearly.
He's a discovery signing.
He's clearly a free agent. He's an experienced MLSer.
Yeah.
He's not going to wow anyone. He's Jeff Laurentiitz.
There you go.
Or Drew Moore.
Oh, wow. But he could just compare it to his actual playing career instead of, like, you know, what he's doing
now. But we could
now.
Put him over the – he could be the one that puts us over the top to get to MLS Cup.
Right.
Like Drew Moore.
More of a steadying presence, yeah, for sure. Also, the change to 157, boggling my mind every time I say it. But make sure you tune in on Sirius. And subscribe to the podcast. Rate us on iTunes. Extra content coming your way. If you didn't listen to the Bob Bradley interview from last show, you really should. We've been getting a lot of good feedback. We've also been getting a lot of people – saying they fell asleep and they hate Bob Bradley now.
So, really?
Yeah.
I mean, YouTube comments are literally the worst, but the YouTube comments were coming with a lot of heat on you guys. I mean, I personally, you know, I don't usually give you guys a lot of compliments.
What was the best heat?
I don't know, I forgot, but it was just a lot of, like, Bob Bradley. Well, he's Bruce Arena's boy, like, all that kind of stuff. But
that's not heat on us.
No, there was very little heat, like, on you, too, just the fact that
Because we didn't really matter.
We didn't really say much.
You didn't really matter, yeah. I mean, I listened to it. Again, great. You guys did a great job. The first 10 minutes, you know, he just talked the entire time without you guys interrupting. Yeah, I mean, I would have just sat there, too. No, everyone should listen to it. It was great.
So, well, let's get into it now because the Super Draft was, as Ben might say, lit. The trades were off the charts here. Another year, another blockbuster with David Akam going to the Union. Ezekiel Barco. Barco watch is officially over. We'll talk about that. I mean, signings are coming fast right now, and they're not going to slow down. A reminder here, we're 29 days away from CCL First Legs, February 20th. And we're just 40 days away from opening day. Preseason started today. If you follow teams on Twitter, you see all the guys showing up at the training facility with cleats in some markets, like L.A., they're strolling up in flip-flops and shorts. In Minnesota, they're like parkas and sweatpants.
I think I just saw that Minnesota like basically just had to cancel training.
Really?
Because it was snowing.
Yeah, like, guys, just show up for some physicals. It's all good. Some news going down today. Montreal Impact announcing new DP midfielder Safir Tadir today. He's a French-born Algerian international. He's got like 42 caps, 5 goals for them. Blerim Djesmaili is the guy who went the other way. He scored in his first game for Bologna. He was more of a attacking 8. This guy, more of a straight-up box-to-box midfielder, not really a goal scorer previously in his career, but he's had stops at Inter, and it was at Bologna to start his career. Went back to Bologna. He's
pretty
been,
high pedigree.
Yeah, he does, for sure, and he's young, 25. They also filled a huge hole at center-back to the Impact. Zachariah Diallo from League 2, he's 31, 6'4", but he's an all-league performer there. So that's the Impact. NYCFC quietly signed.
Wait, are we moving on?
I mean, are we?
No.
Go, jump in.
How phenomenal of a move is this? I love Djesmaili. Everyone knows how much I love Djesmaili.
Yeah.
Best looking man.
Everyone knows how much I love Djesmaili.
Best looking man in MLS. Unbelievable player.
But you have to admit,
huge holes in his game.
The balance of the team.
Yes. So now you bring in a 25-year-old box-to-box player, which is exactly what you needed, rather than having – they had no defense on this team last year, Ben.
I understand that.
Piatti's going to create for
you. They also signed one center back after getting rid of 3.
Okay, that's fine. They still need to sign a center back. But in the midfield, if where you're going to allocate your funds, I'd rather put a guy who's 25 years old, box-to-box, who can handle a full season in MLS, who can handle the physicality of this league and the athleticism of this league and affect the game in two ways rather than just Jamaili, where you have Piatti already, you have some attacking pieces.
Sorry, wait. What other attacking pieces are we talking about?
Moncosu, Anthony Jackson, Hamel, Tabla.
How are you scoring goals?
Jason Vargas is rumored to come back in here. Dominic Oduro, Michael Salazar.
Petrasso, they're saying, is a right back.
They're saying he's a right back?
I think he's more of a right winger.
Yeah, he's not a right back. Read what they said. I think Remy Gar thinks he's a right back.
I don't know. We always get stuck with those because you got to read it, but then sometimes it's completely false. Yeah.
If they say something that specific, especially when it's not his actual position.
They just re-signed. Chris Duval got re-signed, too.
What I'm saying is, it's a great – I love the fact that we're going from a 31-year-old to a 25-year-old, both with – I mean, we're losing a World Cup player, but other than that. But going from a 31-year-old to a 25-year-old is a great move. But I don't know. Who's the third guy in the midfield there, and who's helping Piatti?
They're not done.
I want to evaluate this move later.
So I'm agreeing with you.
Sam Piatti at DM.
Right.
Yeah, that's who's the third guy.
At box to box, and then you're attacking, you need the attacking midfield position. You're a little bit up in the air there, but you could maybe get somebody who's more of like a pace dictator than a strictly like creative guy because you have Ignacio Piatti cutting off that wing. Then the question for you is, as he said, center back, because it was Fisher and Cabrera before. Now you have Diallo in. Seems like a good move.
Is Kyle Fisher, Victor Cabrera, your starter next year?
In the East,
After what we've seen from especially Victor Cabrera.
But this move for Titer puts you in a better position. It defines people's spots, so now you know exactly what you need to go out and find. Mm-hmm. Two, it makes you a better team, a younger team. And Jamaili, even though he was a great player crashing into the box, he wasn't a pure creator.
No.
So he wasn't creating for people either. He was an option and a threat himself.
And also there was a little bit of selfishness to that. He was a turnover machine in bad spots.
So I think if this is how it's going to end up, where you have to lose Jamaili and the turnaround is that you get a 25-year-old box-to-box guy who can play at this level, I think that's a good day for Montreal.
I agree. New York City FC quietly having another good offseason, and here they go with a good free agent signing. Joe Inga Burnett, Norwegian forward. He's like prime of his career, played for Malmo, second Malmo signing for them after Tenerholm at right back.
Is Malmo just signing with MLS? We've just brought Malmo over here.
Malmo
and
had
them
a ton of, like, if you go check them out on Transfer Market, and you should go check out some of these really elite Scandinavian teams, just go see whose contracts just came up. A lot of those guys are coming to MLS because the pay is pretty similar or more here, and the level's higher. So that's basically the situation here. A backup for David Villa, a guy who could play maybe the 10, could play on the wings if you need him, but increasingly they're too deep at every single position.
What was the name of the center forward their first year from Slovenia?
Nemec.
Yeah.
greatest player in MLS history.
They've changed.
Yeah, I mean,
I
think what you look at here is, you know, he takes all of Sean Okoli's minutes, and I think Patrick Vieira is going to trust, I mean, considering where he's played and his pedigree, I haven't actually seen him play. But
he has a cool beard.
He has a great beard. But like you figure that he's going to be able to trust this guy to come in, play striker, maybe push Villa to the left if he needs to at certain points. Maybe this guy plays 1,500 minutes instead of, I think Okoli probably played less than 500.
This is a Norwegian international.
So this
is a tough year for Patrick Vieira in the sense of man management because they have guys in
so many different positions.
We'll get to that later. But
Jack Harrison coming up in a little bit. Rumors linking him to Stoke City. Also, we'll talk super draft. Ola Kamara, David Akam, Darwin Serin, Laren Saga continues, Uri Rossell, Yamil Assad, it just goes on and on and on. The news is coming quick and fast. Ipswich Town, center back Tommy Smith, he officially announced that he's going to Colorado Rapids, so they continue to make moves. They still need a center forward. They probably need another center back. We'll follow along with them right now.
Other piece of that was Cameron Carter-Vickers went on loan to Ipswich, which was why he was available.
Mm-hmm.
So CCV's having a good few months.
Let's get into the big trades here, and we'll start with Ola Kamara. This has been something we've talked about for a long time. We wondered about the potential price. We said it would probably be around $1 million. The final price here for the LA Galaxy for Ola Kamara was Giassi Zardes, $400K in TAM and $100K more in TAM if Ola scores 12 goals or more, which I think is a pretty good bet there. We'll see what happens here. Chris Pontius also signed as a free agent with the Galaxy. Yep, that is official. It has come out. Is that $1 million? Does that add up to you? What was Giassi Zardes' value in your mind?
Right now?
Yeah.
Not $500,000 in TAM. not the way he's played over the last year and a half. If you're Greg Berhalter and you think he fits your system, maybe you can convince yourself. But I don't know there's any way if you're a Crew SC fan or part of Crew SC, you don't feel like you're coming away that you got the low end of what you wanted in that trade for Ola Kamara.
You don't feel that? You don't feel like you got the low end? Because
no, you did get the low end. That's you got the low end of what you were – if you said we want something in this range, you got the low end.
I mean, that's the challenge here when a player comes out and says,
I want to leave. Yeah.
And, you know, you look around in Colorado Rapids, by all reports, everything I was hearing on the ground in Orlando, is that their offer to Columbus Crew SC was a better offer. But the player wanted to go to L.A. The player wanted to be in a different place, not in Colorado, and they had to move on from the deal.
And this is where we run into the problems of – the things that we see in this league that we don't see in other leagues is in another league. First of all, he gets what he wants because he could just sign with another team. But theoretically, they could have just traded him to Colorado. What do they care? I mean, it looks bad, but if it's a better offer, they could have done it.
Problem is, Colorado probably doesn't do it without the extension being signed. And
he has 2 more years left on his contract.
Don't want players,
you're dealing with an unhappy player.
Don't want players that don't want to be there.
And then you look bad as if you're Columbus, if you're trading away a guy to somewhere he doesn't want to go.
We were told at draft by sources close to Colorado that they were going to make the trade anyway. And that they were going to say, if you want to leave, go find us a transfer fee. If not, you'll stay. Clearly, that's not what happened.
Right. And I think the other side of it is, and it goes back to what the Red Bulls told us when we were talking to them about this trade of Sasha Kljestan, is for Columbus Crew SC, allocation money is all well and good, but – if they can't go out and get a replacement, and I know Jesse Zardes at this stage in his career certainly is not an equal replacement, but there was no guarantee in this window that they could have gone out and got a replacement. Then you're stuck with Adam John. So what do you do? How do you balance it? You have to have somebody play the number nine, Jesse Zardes, with elite chance creators around him. And look, they were as elite as you can be in MLS, and Robbie Keane and Landon Donovan scored 16 goals.
Yeah.
So will he score 16?
4 years ago.
Dude, I know.
Yeah, believe but Robbie
I'm
Keane
not, I'm not out here saying he's going to score 16. I'm just saying if you're Greg Berhalter, if you're 3G, as I would like him to be called
Triple
from now
G.
on. I think 3G is a better one, man.
Nah, Triple G is better because it sounds like a wrestler name.
Triple G is a boxer.
There you go. So, I didn't even know that.
I mean, look.
He's a very famous boxer. Kennedy Golovkin.
With Pipa, with Santos, with Miram, assuming that they can hold on to Miram.
Another assumption, yeah.
I mean, he will get chances, and he's not going to play right back.
No, absolutely
but
not.
Why did he get moved to right back? Because he couldn't score.
I'm agreed.
But we're talking about the type of player he is, and he wasn't going to score being set up by, I don't know, an injured Baggio Husicic and Jose Villarreal playing with no confidence.
And
there was no one around him. He had Alessandrini.
I'm not just talking about this year. Either, yeah. And he had Dos Santos and Alessandrini. Well,
yeah.
Dos Santos.
Okay, look, he needed a fresh start. How about this
Fine.
Side of it? He just needed a fresh start. It wasn't going to work in L.A. When your coach moves you to right back and you're a striker, a center forward, come on now.
I just don't like the quotes that I've seen coming out of Columbus saying, this is our guy, he's our, you know.
What are they supposed to say, Ben? Well, they're supposed to be like, well, we got the crap into this stick and, like, Jesse Zardes is going to be
like,
no good.
You could have come out and been like, he needs to come in, considering the way he's played the last 3 years, he needs to come in and fight for a spot. What, you're just going to hand him the starting spot, which is basically what they're saying?
Well, there's a possibility that they're not, but also if you believe that he's a player who operates on pure confidence and has no confidence,
that's
not how you come out and go after
him. To me, this is man management by 3G, Triple G, whatever we want to call him. On the other side, LA Galaxy, their offseason looking pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Like, this was the piece.
Yeah, they got a whole new back line. They got some depth in central midfield.
Tomas Hilarse and the number 2 pick, bring him in. Yep. Matt Doyle's a huge, huge fan.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to start for LA Galaxy.
I don't think he can. You're paying Siani a mil. So.
Yeah. So, and I don't know that you
Well,
need
not a mil, but
what, no, I'm,
a lot
I'm,
of money.
No, I'm sorry. That was not the commenting on the fact that they are paying. That's true. They're paying him that much. It was comment on the way he played last year.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's going to have to start.
And then you look at Perry Kitchen in holding midfield. You hope he's able to protect that back line a little bit. You get Legette back. At some point, they add some more pieces at fullback. They add some pieces, of course, now at center forward in Ola Kamara, who was a top 5 goal scorer in this league over the last 2 years.
Like top 2 goal scorer.
Yeah. And you like what you see.
So you guys are saying this, and Doyle's saying this, that, you know, this is a great offseason. And, you know, they definitely added a ton of pieces here that are going to be starters. But you go down the list. I'm going down. So Jorgen Sjelvik, that looks that looked like a decent – I think that looks like a good signing guy.
Another one of those but if you go look at the Norwegian league. That
yeah, but look at Rolf Felcher, who hasn't played in a year and a half. Perry Kitchen is coming off his worst spell in his career, right? David Bingham got benched in San Jose. Savannah Carrasco is a depth piece. Silvestri, depth. Clementa is a – he's another depth piece.
Well, he's a wait till Ashley Cole's gone, and then whatever. He moves in.
And then Hilliard Arce, who – I don't know. I think he's going to play a lot, personally. And then you get Olo Kamara. But you go look at those five or six other guys. Is it really that good of an offseason?
Because you're coming
from being the worst team in MLS, so that's obviously a positive.
Yeah, you upgraded at center back. You bring in one of the top two center forwards the last 2 years. So taking
all these other guys out.
Taking everything else away, though, your team's going to play better because they're going to score goals. It's going to be easier. They're going to be more relaxed.
Preseason that, with Jonathan Dos Santos.
Right. Exactly. Jonathan Dos Santos is actually part of the equation as an addition.
No Jermaine Jones.
And Perry Kitchen knows this league. So, yeah, maybe he didn't play great
he knows his job
for wherever the hell he was, because I can't even name what plant, what counties, what country he was in. He's going to come back in and feel more comfortable. He's wanted by Ziggy Schmidt. On top of all that, yeah, David Bingham got dropped. The guy was a U.S. national team goalkeeper at 27. He's now 28 years old. He's still young for a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Players make mistakes. I'm sorry, Bill Hamid makes mistakes all the time, and he's still
not
the best.
Not to the extent that David Bingham
did last year. There were some howlers last year. I think there's a middle ground here. And I think what it is that Ziggy Schmidt, when you're in the situation he was, when you're hamstrung in the Tam and Gam situation, which they openly admitted at the combine when it came to that Ola Kamara trade, and that's another factor in the trade. Like, Columbus can say, we want this for him, and LA can say, we don't got it. Like, we literally cannot give this to
him. I don't understand that, by the way. I mean, that's fine. But Tam?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. You just got 5.2 mil.
Yeah. Well, the 2.8 can't be traded.
Yeah, but you could trade 2.4.
Okay, but that maybe means the other trades and the Bingham and Perry trades, remember, they had to give away a bunch of allocation. So they may not have that liquid allocation, or it may be negotiation ploy. Whatever it is, Ziggy and Galaxy had to take on some reclamation projects. They had to, like, buy low on some guys.
Yeah,
that's the David Binghams, that's the Perry Kitchens, that's the Rolf Felchers of the
also,
world.
But that's exactly what they are, reclamation projects. So saying they're going to come in, I saw something from Doyle, it's not up yet. He has them in his top 10 teams going into next year. You can't say that.
These
reclamation projects, none of these guys have played together.
David,
you don't know how it's all going
to work. David Bingham's better than Clement Diop. You can admit that.
Yeah, so it's an upgrade.
So they've already upgraded.
Yes. But, I mean, we're talking.
Yeah, I don't know that they're
the
top 10
team
right now.
Is just,
all right, let us know. 401-206-0MLS, LA Galaxy, rate their offseason, where they stand right now in the hierarchy. Of course, as we get to preseason, we will continue to start to really run down where this league stands top to bottom. Let's talk David Akam, Philadelphia Union. Been a lot of talk about what they will or will not do. And they did something. They finally made that big move that their fans have just been absolutely thirsting for. In the middle of the super draft, when things slowed down a little bit, between the first and second round, we were waiting for that big move, Dax McCarty move.
It was somewhere around there.
Yeah. Paul Tenorio tweets, and we all go crazy, of course, $1.2 million total allocation, $900K TAM, $300K GAM, Philly sending that package to the Chicago Fire. Half that fee will come now. Half that fee will come after the 2018 season. And then the news coming out basically on the sell-on that Chicago Fire basically own, like, most of the players still sell-on-wise, which makes sense to me because the Union are not selling David Akam. They got him signed to a new deal based on your reporting, Dave. And this is both, I think, in the flash department, but also the substance department, what this club desperately needed. They had to do something. Props to Ernie Stewart, props to Jim Curtin, props to that organization for doing it. It may not be enough to get him to the playoffs, but it's enough to get that dream started.
It's also not the last piece. Ernie Stewart said to me multiple times, we have an attacking midfielder that we are still going to sign, most likely coming from Europe. So he is one of the last two pieces of this the center of this team, which is definitely needed. But David Akam just makes everyone's life easier because he can stretch the field, which is going to give more space for Madunian to operate in. It's also going to give him a weapon to create for, which makes his life even easier. It also makes your fullbacks' lives easier because now their fullback has to sit back and defend more. It also makes your life easier for CJ Sapong. He's going to have more 1v1 opportunities,
he's not gonna get
more chances.
He's not gonna get the crap kicked out of him 24/7 because your center backs, both of which just centered in on him and honed in on him last year, are going to have to respect that ball in behind.
Yeah, it covered everything Philly needs. It's not the end. Just adding David Akam, I don't think makes this team a playoff team.
Agreed.
They still need that attacking midfielder who can be dangerous, but it was one of the two pieces, maybe three if you think they need a center back as well, that they needed to bring in. And they got it done, and they got it done in a situation where, no, maybe they're not going to sell him for a ton of money later on, but he's going to be good for them in Major League Soccer. They didn't have to pay a transfer fee. You trade for him in league. You get exactly the value you want from him for 3 years. And even if they sell him then and don't get most of it, it's fine as long as they're a good team with him on the field.
And actually, I think the price is pretty reasonable, especially for a team like Philly. And one thing that they didn't have last year was a secondary goal-scoring option. They now have that in David Akong. Now, it must be said that injuries have been an issue for him at times in MLS. Form has been an issue for him.
Well, not just in – yeah, I mean, he's obviously had some issues with coaches and GMs in this league in the past. And it's something that I'm sure Philly took into account when they made this deal.
That's why you have to re-sign him.
He was the best player in the league for about a year, a month. And I think it was June and July. When Nicholas was scoring all those goals, a lot of that was coming from David Akam and the things that he was able to do in the field.
And I think CJ Sapong's a better back-to-goal, playing balls in behind for a partner sort of forward than Nicholas is, who's much more of a...
Takeaway Nicholas, whoever Chicago was playing in 2015 and 2016.
Yeah.
I mean, he scored 10 and 9 goals.
Yeah, there was nobody on those.
And there was no one on those teams.
Garbage.
So that part alone gives you at least some comfort knowing, hey, without Nicholas, without Schweinsteiger, without Dax, he was still dangerous, and CJ's a better player than anyone.
And they go get John Picchero, the fire dude. They go get Mo Adams. We'll talk about the super draft in just a second. One quick point, that 900K TAM, and we'll get to this on Minnesota as well. You look at 1.2, it feels big. 900 in TAM feels big. But to minimize the GAM outlay, I think, was huge for them. Because for a team like Philly, they may not be using that TAM. It may be better used for them to go get a player within the league and make that sort of deal than try to go recruit outside of the league. And it may be cheaper.
Sign three TAM-level type players is going to be tougher for them potentially.
Right.
Than just getting David Kahn, who you know what you're getting. Exactly.
And that's where the assets for each individual team and their kind of profile and who they can sign, who they're looking to sign, what their budget is, starts to come into play. For other teams, like maybe the Galaxy, you have to have that much TAM because you need it to buy down all these guys. For the Union right now, they may not need that. So then they can flip it for a David Akam.
I think what we're seeing, what I think kind of a strategy maybe out of Philly is they're going to maybe just become a counterattacking team. Where you have Pico on one side, you have Akam on the other side, you have CJ Sapong getting the ball and trying to lay it off to them so they can run at defenders. I think that may be the strategy, especially since they've had trouble conceding goals. Maybe pack it in a little bit more.
Let Madunian in.
Doi's going to have to run around a lot.
Where do we sit on – is Madunian in a number six in Major League Soccer?
I forgot who was – I was having this conversation at the Super Draft after this trade went down. I think it was with Franco Panizo.
Legend. Hey, Franco.
What you think of when you think of Madunian is a defensive midfielder, but he doesn't really run.
Yeah.
And his skill is picking out passes. So is he actually – you play him at number 10? And then go out
but
and
if
get
a asking him, if you're not asking him to run and you're saying, look, hit some diagonal balls, find the feet of Bedoya, find that number 10.
But who
find
is
going
to run? Who plays
Bedoya's
next to him?
Bedoya's going to have to run so much.
So now Bedoya plays defensive midfielder and box-to-box midfielder for this team.
Well, I'm saying, you go out and get it. Instead of getting – I think they have a huge decision to make here. What is Madunian in? And based off that, do you get a number 6?
Yeah.
Or do you get a number 10?
Ernie Stewart said to me, we're getting an attacking midfielder. So that answers part of that question.
Well, I guess he's a number 6.
Unless, and I'm not saying this is what they're thinking, Bedoya gets pushed maybe out wide and you bring in a true number 6 to play next to Madunian.
I don't know. They got some questions to answer here, but Akam was a good start for the Philadelphia Union. Darwin Serin also moved on draft day. San Jose traded him to Houston for 175K in allocation, 75 GAM, 100 TAM, and number 8 for the Dynamo.
That's a great deal.
I agree. It further reinforces what they're going to be, which is exactly what you just said Philly could be, which is that counterattacking team that are solid with their back 6, and then they try to beat you with 4 guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to have to come in and earn his minutes. He's still got Cabezas there, who they just got full transfer. Eric Alexander. We don't know year to year what you're going to get from him, but he was really, really good at the end of the year.
And these conversations we're having, the next level of MLS is depth.
Yeah. So yeah,
teams
don't
need to have 12 good players. They can start to have 14
or
15.
It's just because you're the captain of El Salvador, just because you've been a starter for another team, just because you got traded for 175K, doesn't make you a starter, my man. Like, come in and earn it. Get it done. That's especially true with the likes of Ezequiel Barco coming to the league. Barco Watch is over. We've got more on that after the break, as well as Super Draft React.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius FMC Channel 157. Let's talk a little bit about the economics of selling players pursuant to this, because we've talked a lot about New York City FC and their two-deep strategy.
Are we not going to talk about Barco?
We're going to talk about Barco and the strategy of selling players. So via Barco, via the Jack Harrison rumors here. So the Barco deal is done. Darren Eales says it's $15 million is in the ballpark. 14 is some of the reporting, but either way, it's a MLS record transfer fee. You know, if you listen to the show, it's a big deal. This is huge. This is a game changer, both for Atlanta United, for MLS, for the league and the global market. So that's just a fee, by the way. You have salary. You have other packages that go into these player acquisitions. On the flip side, you have the Jack Harrison rumors right now that he could be going to Stoke City in this window. He says EPL. The results say maybe Champo, but we'll see what happens to Stoke City. Right now, the rumor is $4.5 million or perhaps $5.5 million with add-ons and performance and all those other nice things for Jack Harrison. So this is where it gets complicated, because the way that selling players in this league works means that if New York City sells Jack Harrison, they're probably only getting half of that based on the fact that he came in via the super draft. So that complicates things. And then that's the league cut coming straight off the top. And then you're talking about, okay, what can we use on with that money? Well, you can reinvest in infrastructure. You can reinvest in your youth. $650K in GAM also comes your way. And that comes first, and then the rest gets cut down and sent to everybody else. And then you can reinvest in DPs. But they can't really, because they have three DPs. So they can use that for future DP investment. Or it can go straight back to ownership, which I doubt would happen because they have more money than basically anybody else in the league. But you don't clear up a DP slot. So, like, what's the real benefit for them in 2018 of selling Jack Harrison other than doing right by Jack Harrison? Meanwhile,
doing right by potentially Jesus Medina and whatever other young DPs they want to come, or young players that they want to
correct.
Come.
Correct. But what? Jesus, they,
you set an example.
Sure, sure. But Jesus Medina is a different situation, because if you sell him, now you have an open DP slot, which you can immediately reinvest into. And the money that you reinvested in Jesus Medina,
okay, I get what you're saying.
You can use the money from the proceeds of that transfer to fund it. So let's say the total package for Jesus Medina was $8 million. If you sell him for 10, immediately you get $8 million to recoup that investment. And you may not be able to reinvest as much in the next DP, but that was basically free. And that's the Barco Atlanta United method right here. Because if Almiron gets sold, and let's say his total all-in was, I don't know, between 10 and 15, between fee and everything else, and they sell him for 25, all of a sudden their DP investment was free. So when you talk about them paying big transfer fees, big salaries, recruiting those players, they can fund it, and it's like a hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. And then when they get the money back, they say, we'll just reinvest this into this next DP.
Right.
And that's where all this gets complicated. And I know that you're probably listening at home. I don't know. It sounded complicated to me. And
the Jack Harrison stuff is
the
complicated.
The Jack Harrison stuff, the Almiron Barco stuff is pretty simple. These players are just literally like investments like stocks.
It's right. Also literally
all it is.
But the problem is, like stocks, if you buy, and they're buying high on Barco.
Yeah, they're spending.
Most
a lot on
people
Barco.
I talk to say that they think that this fee is more than he's probably. It's a little bit of an overpay. But Atlanta's like, cool, it's all good. We think we can sell him down the line for 25, yeah, 30 mil if things go right. If he plays one game for the Argentina team, first team, all of a sudden his value is like double what it is now.
I think they need to – they're going to need to sell Almiron to prove this market, to prove that they can then sell Barco for
agreed.
30 million. If they never sell Almiron, I don't know how you're going to get – unless he just absolutely just crushes it in this league and goes like 20-15 or something like – 20-15 or something like that. I don't know how you're proving to the market that this dude is worth – more than that.
And they know that. Tata Martino said at the Combine, in an interview with our own Octavio Sequeira, that, yeah, man, like, I tell these guys, this is a stop. And we'll get the most out of you in this stop. We'll prepare you for the next stop, and we'll move you along. Darren Eales said the same thing. Miguel Almiron, out in L.A. at MLS Media Days, said the same thing. He's like, look, I want to go to Europe. That's the deal. I'm not in a hurry. When the right offer comes along, we'll do it. But I think the right offer is going to come along.
Yeah, but the Barco moves makes Almiron's sale possible because for a fan base, you still have tenants to be like, yeah, show up next week and watch Barco play. You love watching Barco play.
And watch the next guy come in.
Exactly. But Barco is the next guy. You've done that now.
That's the succession plan. Sure. Yeah. But once you move Almiron out, Barco comes inside, you expect, let's say, a year, 6 months, whatever it is down the road, they're not going to just sit on their laurels.
No, you wouldn't expect them to. But I saw you having a conversation on Twitter, and I didn't really look at it because I don't care. No, I'm just kidding.
Nice.
So I don't want to like come in at the wrong angle. But this is how Benfica operates. This is how Ajax operates. This is how FC Porto operates. This is how every team at the low end of Serie A operates. This is how Southampton operates. And yet, if they make a mistake, they're off. They're floating because they have
Borussia
debt.
Borussia Dortmund,
and they have,
by the way, operates a little bit like this as well.
But they have debts. They have problems. If this goes poorly, Arthur Blank is fine. Atlanta United is fine. Like, yes, you want to hit on every single one, but what you were talking about was, hey, Almiron becomes free. If he doesn't, it's not like the team's in trouble. And then you can reset, and you can go out and try again. And no, no one wants to lose money, but the point is, in the world soccer market, this isn't absurd on any level.
No.
And it's probably safer for Atlanta than for some of these other
teams. And I agree that Arthur Blank and you know, he can absorb this a little bit better than others. He also may not have to if this Barco thing goes south. And look, this is a big bet. 15, 14, whatever it is, eight-figure fee on an 18-year-old who's played like 55 first-team games, that's a risk. It really is because there something has to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, and that something, realistically, is probably him getting in with Argentina to really ignite that market and create the size of fee that you need. But the flip side is they didn't get Hector Villalba didn't cost them all that much.
No.
I think Hector Villalba is the guy that I think that they maybe look at and be like, this is our guy that's going to be here.
He's going to stay.
3, 4, 5 years.
And his contract's in a place where you can tam him down. So he sits on the
same
side
thing.
Of that.
You're talking about Joseph Martinez. So you have other pieces that if this one doesn't go right, you could sell,
even if
get return from, and reinvest back into that system.
Even if you hit on the Almiron deal like we're talking about, you've already covered that. If you hit Almiron 25 to 30, you've now covered Barco and Almiron. Let's say Barco's a complete washout. I don't know why that's the conversation we're having right now. Let's say he is, and you end up getting zero for him, and he plays in 5 years NPSL because that's where he ends up. Then
that's a crazy scenario.
I think we're talking about this in this way because it is the biggest move. I mean, we've been talking about this for weeks, so that's why maybe we didn't start off with it. Because this is the biggest move in MLS history, but it's also the biggest risk in MLS history. He is 18 years old. We don't know.
Is it the biggest risk in MLS history?
In terms of as a loan deal by itself, yes. Because he's a guy now who, let's say you're not worried about selling him, this franchise in 4 or 5 months when Almiron is gone in the summer, because we all know that Almiron's gone in the summer, this franchise rests on his shoulders as an 18-year-old kid. Now,
does it though? If you have Joseph Martinez and Hector Villalba and they are your like A-plus,
Joseph Martinez?
You have breathing room.
No, you also have to show me Joseph can play a full season and can be a guy by himself out there. I know he started last year well when Almiron really wasn't in. Villalba I love as well. I agree. I don't know that a franchise goes on his shoulders. Where's Carlos Carmona going to be in 6 months, in a year as well?
Carlos Carmona, by the way, everything I'm hearing, not going anywhere.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he won't want to at some point.
Agreed.
That doesn't mean
but he's
that
under contract. They got him for a few years.
So
this Cola stuff.
So yes,
Atlanta fans, I would not pay that much attention.
I think if Almiron steps out and isn't immediately replaced, then yes, this franchise is on Barco's shoulders. You could say it's on Barco and Joseph. That's fine, but Joseph's also a young player, and he hasn't proven that he can play healthy for a full MLS season.
We'll see. Look, this is very interesting stuff, and it also is pursuant to the Kyle Larin saga.
Yeah. I was going to say, are we done with Jack Harrison?
Yeah, because the Jack Harrison thing is, I mean, even more complicated than all this.
Well, outside of the complicated factors of whether it's worth it for them or whether it's not worth it for them from just a strictly economic point of view.
So here's my thing. You mentioned where the money goes and how it is. NYCFC is building an academy from the ground up. So to have some of that money to invest in your academy or infrastructure, quote unquote, one, isn't the worst idea in the world. And two, you're building an academy out of the New York City area with some of the best young players in the world. We've seen what Red Bulls have done from a similar area.
And how did the Red Bulls do that? They sold Josie out.
Exactly. You need to sell to prove, one, to young players in that area, yes, be a part of our academy. This is the right way to go. And two, just to build the facilities to put them in, to pay for the buses
but
to
I
get them
but
places.
But I don't actually think they need the money to do that. It would be helpful.
Because you're saying the ownership group has
the ownership
it.
If the ownership group wanted to do it, they could just do
but
it.
This
and they
gives
are
you,
doing it.
This gives you a clear,
sure.
This is
look,
Claudio
even,
Reyna's money to spend.
Look, even rich people are coming in and they're like, am I making money off of this?
No,
and
for sure.
They ask questions like that.
For sure. And that is where the Jack Harrison sale comes in, where you say, look, there is a model for us. Mm-hmm. And I think the Jesus Medina signing,
yeah,
that is in the same zone as Barco, just not at the same investment level.
Yes.
But it is a significant investment. And that's one thing I just have to reinforce over and over and over. Barco's getting all the headlines, but like Jason Vargas, who listening at home, you probably don't even know who that is because Montreal signed him like 2 years ago and sent him out on loan 2 years in a row. But they spent like $3 million on him. Probably total package on that, you're talking six, somewhere in that range. That's significant money, and there's a lot of guys in this league like that, from the Tomas Martinez's to now the Albert Elises to the
to
Josue Coleman's, the Christian Coleman's.
Two Coleman's, yeah.
But you talked about missing.
Yeah.
There are misses here.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Lucas Milano is the standout miss.
Yeah.
That was a big investment by the Timbers.
As was Gonzalo Verón.
Right. And those are misses, and those misses happen. So this is an interesting period of MLS, and I'm waiting for that also to carry over to U.S. players, the Kellen Acostas of the world, the Tyler Adams of the world, domestic players in the sense of the Kyle Larins of the world, whose saga continues. And now it seems like he's moved on from Besiktas, who, you know, took some pictures of him with, like, medical equipment on, and then we're like, yeah, we'd probably loan you out.
Doing the Eagles screen.
Yeah, and so now he's talking Olympiacos. We'll see what happens with that, but Orlando City, I imagine – probably we're banking on some of that allocation. Probably we're banking on some of that income to help fund their DP side. So we'll see what happens there. Also, rumors out there that Uri Rossell could be returning to MLS and that Yamil Assad would like to return to MLS with Minnesota a possible destination. I can confirm that Atlanta still own his MLS rights. Any team that would want to get with Yamil Assad would have to trade for those.
So we're talking about Paul Ariola style?
Yeah, Perry Kitchen style.
So we're talking about like 500K?
Yeah.
Which is...
yeah. They're not. They would not do it for a paltry amount, no doubt about it. Uri Russell, meanwhile, is on the allocation list because he was sold for a fee of, I think it's greater than $800,000. So he comes back in through allocation. Uri Russell is an interesting one. I don't know. It's not flashy.
It's a good signing, though.
But when I heard Bob Bradley talking about a player to dictate pace in the midfield,
that'd be a good one for them.
I thought about him. Now, if I'm LAFC, I don't sign him as a DP, he's got to be a TAM player. I think any team in this league, he's a TAM guy.
But I don't think there's a team in Major League Soccer he wouldn't fit on. Like, literally. I don't think you can name one team that Uri Russell wouldn't. Maybe NYCFC, because of what they have
in
midfield.
Yeah,
but
like, from a stylistic perspective.
DC
like,
United, I think, have enough players.
Vancouver Whitecaps, he might not fit.
He's better than all those guys. And, yeah, he got –
FC Dallas.
He's good enough in this league
don't
to come
into – don't you dare besmirch Ali Ghazal.
God. I was wondering which central midfielder you were going to go with there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yamil Assad on the other side, people were coming at me last night. Like, he would be the best player on a number of teams in this league, Minnesota among them, who were rumored to be interested.
Best player on a number of teams in this league?
Huh?
You think he'd be the best player?
You don't think he'd be the best player in Minnesota?
I think he's a grinder.
Best player in Minnesota is Christian Ramirez.
I think he's a grinder, and he will work on any team, but he wouldn't be the best player on every team.
Okay. Now, I didn't say every team.
Minnesota. Literally just said.
I said a,
you
literally number
just
of
said.
Teams.
Sorry, okay. Number of teams.
Number of teams.
He would fit well in Montreal.
Yamil Assad.
Yeah, that would be that.
That actually okay. All right, I've talked myself into that one.
Also Chicago, replacing a comp.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And they just got a pretty good little haul of allocation money, did they not?
Yep.
Yeah. We'll see. Speaking of Chicago, a lot of people saying they won the Super Draft. Of course, that went out on Friday in Philadelphia. They landed John Baccaro with the 5 pick. They sent 100K in Tam, 75K in Gam, the 15 pick in Matt Lamson to Minnesota United for that one. Signed senior Matt Herman Trophy Award winner, 16 goals, 14 assists his senior season for Wake Forest. And then they sent RSL 85K in Gam for the 10 pick and got Mo Adams. Kind of a 6 or 8, depending on how you look at him, out of Syracuse.
He's a 6.
Okay, 6.
He's
Englishman.
He's going to replace, you know, whatever, Janino's minutes, Mihailovic's minutes, that kind
of. And it's free because it's GA.
Rumors
are they want Alan Gordon as a free agent. The other winner, I think, that came out of the Super Draft was very clearly Minnesota. They got Mason Toy with the number 7, which they paid $150K TAM for. Wyatt Olmsberg with the 15. Matt Doyle had him going like 4th or 5th overall on his mock draft, which was clearly wrong. Carter Manley, $50K and TAM for the number 23 to swap with Toronto C with the 28. Of course, Matt Lampson will come and compete with the starting job, and they got $75K in GAM out of the deal. Total pay, $100K in TAM. Manny Lagos, and this goes back to Philly. Teams that don't have resources have to be creative.
Yeah.
That was a creative use of draft day, and they did a good job. Now, the question is, do any of these guys truly make them better day one, March 3rd, in MLS? Maybe Wyatt Olmsberg, definitely Matt Lampson.
Also going but it's back.
Not definitely huge, Matt Lampson?
It's not huge. I mean,
Matt Lampson's better than Bobby Shuttleworth right now.
If we're talking about mistakes made last year, you want to jump on David Bingham.
They are two of the better backup keepers in MLS. Neither of them is really a full-time starter. Well, Matt Lampson, I think, is a better goalkeeper. Also, in the same conversation we've been having this whole time, Mason Toy is a young GA that could potentially fill in for when Abu Dunlady gets sold, if that's the angle that you go. So,
and he's actually American as opposed to all the rest of the GA guys.
So, yeah, that helps you. Wyatt Olmsberg is a good center back. They need depth at that position.
Left-footed, too.
Every team needs depth at that position.
Maybe you can move Calvo to left back.
Yeah, and I actually like Carter Manley. So he's a big fullback right now, quote-unquote. If you play three in the back, he can be a center back as well.
That's interesting for them. They probably aren't going to spend money. So this is where you start talking about, you know, where do these guys fit in? What's it mean for them long-term? Are they a fringe playoff team right now, Minnesota United?
If Adrian Heath has them playing
Everybody's a fringe playoff team.
In the Western Conference, if Adrian Heath has them playing a cohesive style and has a healthy team, you know, Mark Birch, you didn't have most of last year. Sam Cronin, you have now on top of.
Questions about Sam Cronin's future with some of the concussion stuff from last year.
But they put a team together towards the end of the year that started to play well together. So if you can carry that over to year two, you have more solid options defensively.
To be fair, they did that, but they haven't done anything this offseason.
No,
really.
They haven't done a single
thing. So every other team has done almost every other team has improved.
The Cameroon head coach says Pangop is not done, which that mind-blowing right there. That's an interesting comment from him. So we'll see what happens. Of course, they have every winger in the world, and we'll see how they fit them in addition to Kevin Molino.
I was just going to go super draft for a second. Really like Jeff Caldwell to NYCFC. He's good with his feet. I know Sean Johnson had a good year, but he's a young keeper. He's a good shot stopper. He's good passing the ball out of the back. That's what Patrick Vieira wants.
FC Dallas collected all the Right to Dream players, minus Edipoku, who went to Columbus in the second round. And, yeah, he dropped a little bit and had to sit around, but he's got to be stoked because he's going to, like,
Team Ghana.
Yeah, like Black Stars 2 in Columbus with Lalas Abubakar and Jonathan Mensah and Harrison Offal. Seems like a good place for him to start his career, especially given that they may lose a little bit of depth on the wings. We'll see. He's not going to be a starter, but he has some time. Francis Atuahene, $200K in GAM is what it cost him for the number 4. That's what FC Dallas paid. Then they picked up Emma Tuasi later in the first round. But that's more than LAFC paid to move to the 3 with DC United to get Tristan Blackman. They paid $100K TAM, $100K GAM. Of course, they took Jao Moutinho off the top at number 1. What'd you think of LAFC's draft, Dave? Was Blackman a reach? A lot of people were calling him a reach.
I felt like he was. Bob Bradley clearly has views on soccer. He feels very strongly about them. He has views on personalities and leaders, and he watched him play a lot, and he talked to him one-on-one, and he moved up to get him. So if Bob Bradley thinks it's the right move for him, then it's the right move. I think Blackman, the thing that's nice about him is he's a really tall, really athletic fullback that can play inside a 3-man back line, can play inside a 4-man back line as well at center back, or play at fullback. And John Thorrington said to us it's hard to develop depth. They brought 2 players in who can play 2 to 3 positions. High-level soccer IQs and the versatility physically to play 2 or 3 spots. And Bob Bradley, I think that's what he needs right now. So he's got 2 guys who can play fullback for him day one, or they can step inside. Moutinho can go into holding midfield as well. I'm not crazy about what Moutinho's game is at the MLS level, but if that's what Bob Bradley feels like he can use in his team, then it's the right play.
Maybe they think we get him into our system, we give him a year, give him a year and a half, get his body right.
I'm just curious that so many teams
move. The skill level is there
for Moutinho.
Yeah. As a soccer player, just ability on the ball, comfort on the ball, seeing the game. It was pretty clear from the combine that he was elite.
Although one of the things people saw at combine was he was the creator on Akron, even as a center back, and he takes a lot of touches. The game goes through him. At the next level, is Benny Failhaber waiting for a center back to take three touches and look up the field to give him the ball? Is Carlos Vela going to do the same? You got to get that ball moving.
They're going to like bite his head off.
Yeah, exactly. My other question about Blackman is they trade up to the third pick to get him. Didn't have a good combine, had a good college career, came in as one of the top-rated fullbacks, which maybe put you at 8 or 9. Did they need to trade up to the third pick to get him? Could they have saved a little bit of money if they'd gone and traded with Minnesota at 5? Other picks maybe moved around in that top 10 that they could have potentially saved a little bit and still got
him. I think what they saw is that I think Montreal was always going to trade that pick at 4.
Yeah.
I think that was, I mean, from
just they traded both random stuff. They traded both their picks and Remy Gard.
Random things I heard over a couple of days about Montreal is that they were going to trade
that. Well, Remy Gard came out straight out and said that our like homegrown players, Canada U23s, are better than these guys. Why would I?
This was like after, yeah. So I think everyone knew that. So I think Bob Riley's like, we'll have to get in front of, maybe this Dallas deal was already in place before he can make the deal with DC for the number 3 pick. And he's like, okay, I need to jump ahead of them in case somebody wants Tristan Blackman.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was the player that he thinks anybody was going to take. I mean, I don't really know how the quality of any of these players, to be honest. So
you also have to think about, we don't know what LAFC are going to do with the rest of that roster. Right now, it still feels pretty bare. And when you had Bob going through the 11 with us, like, there was literally 11.
Yeah,
and Steven Banisher has been announced, and Kellen Mallis obviously is announced, but there's a lot to build on, and they are the ones that know where that money's going.
Well, I'm assuming it's going somewhere in the midfield.
Yeah, it has to. Better. Gotta.
Unless Kellen Mallis is going to be playing 3,000 minutes this year.
I don't think LAFC's worried. You look at MLS across the board right now, and this injection of TAMs led to, I think, a lot of agents trying to push for just a little bit more at the last second. You look at Kaku and stuff like that. It seems like a lot of MLS teams have deals lined up that they're just a few days away. Over the next week, we're going to hear.
Yeah.
And I had LAFC fans reaching out asking me what I thought about their roster, and that's what I told them is I think John Thorington and Bob Bradley have 6 or 7 guys that are on the verge that they know are coming in. It's just a matter of crossing the T's and dotting the I's.
Anything else stand out for you from Superdraft? I mean, I think the key for folks to remember, rounds 3 and 4 went down, is that very few players outside the first round, and honestly, we had a number of guys in that first round get waived.
Yeah, no.
This year. I mean, there's
the
no guarantee 10, that these guys will contribute to
your
team.
The number 10 pick from last year, I think it was Joe Holland, is not going to be on the 2018 Houston Dynamo. You know, Chris Adewiachem got waived. I mean, he was a 12th pick, I think. A lot of these guys just aren't going to play. I mean, you have the GA guys. You have the signed seniors. Those guys are going to play this year or be on rosters this year. Outside of that, you're looking at maybe 14 to 15 other players, and everyone else is going to be in USL.
What does that say to you guys about the state of the Superdraft, the purpose of the Superdraft, the value of the Superdraft?
We had an interesting conversation with one unnamed MLS coach who talked about the draft maybe being a situation similar to baseball where you can draft guys before they go to college. You hold their rights for guys that are maybe outside of MLS Academy regions, and then they have the option to go to college or come play with you. So you get your hands on them a little bit earlier at 16 or 17. They can come in and be a part of your U17s, learn your system.
Maybe if you have a PDL team, they come train in the summers with you.
They know where their future would be. And then in that same draft, you could also have college kids so that, you know, teams could have an option. I don't mind that idea. I think with
– basically, it's like futures stock.
Right.
I heard like 3 or 4 different ideas from different people, you know, in different involvement and actually in MLS and not in MLS. There's an interesting Charlie Boehm column on Pro Soccer USA with some interesting quotes from Oscar Pereira that I encourage people to check out. I think, you know, in my perfect world, it would be just for myself, it'd be just 1 round.
Yeah.
And then just let everyone else just be on trial with other teams. And that's basically all this is. You're just getting their rights to come to training camp and trying to understand.
Yeah.
That's all the vast majority of these players.
But one of the things is, and me and Ben talked about this because Ben put out the article about what guys from last year did, is I think it's in 2 or 3 years. It's when guys get their feet professionally, when they get brought in to be the next Luke Mulholland, right? You're a professional, you're a veteran, maybe you're not a top-line MLS player. You come in, you're cheap. Now your team has issues, they have holes, you fill them. And then you look at guys, not from last year's draft class, but from 3 years ago, where A lot of them are the starting fullbacks in MLS. A lot of them are backup holding midfielders like a Servando Carrasco. No, they're not game changers, but they have value in the
league.
There's
a certain they fill those the 18 to 20 spots right. on the senior roster, the guys that are still on budget. I think that's where you're looking to make.
Steve Birnbaum's and
well, that's
Jeff
why you, Cameron's. That's why you still have the first round. I think you still need the first. Right. I think the first round, there should always be some sort of MLS draft with the first round.
I think two rounds is fair because the thing about the draft as well is the parity side. Because if you eliminate the draft, all of a sudden you allow. Because I think it's okay for the third and fourth rounds when teams start to pass. Like when teams are passing on the opportunity to draft players,
yeah.
that tells you that those rounds don't have any real value other than to assign like first crack. But
I
why
mean,
not make it?
They also have value for the conference call so I can enjoy it.
why not make it just like, hey, after the first two rounds, go talk to players. If you want to bring him into camp,
yeah.
He gets to choose where he goes.
Right.
Exactly.
And it's all about figuring out who can make it like, hey, you know what? I'm an attack-minded right back. And New England drafted me, but they drafted two right backs in the first and second rounds. So, like, I'm not going to make that team.
Exactly.
Like, maybe I go to a USL team. Maybe yep. I don't even go to MLS camp.
And a lot of these guys will. The ones that get drafted to teams that have two teams right in their city or right there, that's an opportunity. San Jose was really happy with their draft. Paul Marie in the first round, who's a French but has American citizenship fullback, who serves a pretty nice ball. And then two strikers in the second round in Musovski and Chow that they like. And they've got Reno. So those guys are going to play a lot in Reno. Chris Weehan, who got drafted late last year, was a big-time player for them at
Reno.
He actually went undrafted.
Yeah, he wasn't even drafted.
Yep.
He was at the Combine, and then he went undrafted, and then he led the league in assists.
I think he was the last invite to Combine. I think he got invited, like, the day before and came. So you never know what's going
to
happen.
You just don't know how they're going to transition to the professional environment. Either way, it was a fun week in MLS. All this news flying around. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS. Email us, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. We're going to go to break. On the other side, mailbag time.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back on Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM Channel 157 into the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS. Call us, text us, email us, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. What do we got, Div?
Landon Donovan is just scouting future USMNT talent in Mexico. He has a lot of leverage because of his legend status and may be down there convincing dual nationals to pick the U.S. so as to avoid another Gonzalez situation. Rhett from Peculiar, Missouri.
Interesting. Hercules Gomez reporting today that despite claims to the contrary, nobody from U.S. soccer, certainly not Thomas Rongen, ever visited the Gonzalez household. This from Jonathan Gonzalez's father. So that is, once again, another wrinkle to what is already a situation that makes U.S. soccer fans head hurt extremely badly, but we will survive. We will move on, but we damn well better learn some lessons.
I don't know. U.S. soccer has been a lot to deal with over the last few weeks.
Man.
Jordan Meager. Guys, why didn't the Fire use TAM or discretionary TAM to buy down David Akam's budget charge? I get that they were trying to clear out cap space for a more creative attacking player, but couldn't they have brought down his salary with TAM and then used that new space to sign a young DP that could fill the creative void? They're in dire need of a number 10. With Akam gone, they now need a number 10 and a productive winger. It seems like Juan Quintero, who we didn't mention in the show, has signed with River Plate.
Yeah.
That's Jordan saying that, but it seems that way.
Yeah, it seems like that's off the table as well. I mean, John Macaro can fill, I think, potentially both those holes. He kind of looks like a Michael Deleu type, which is to say that he has some good goal-scoring instincts, but he's pretty creative and he wants to drop off somebody in front of him. So I think he could play in that little hole for now at least. If they don't get it done, maybe they have to wait till the summer. Or he could play on the left conceivably and have a number 10 in the middle and
also,
be more of a tucked-in type of player, but they do need depth on the wing.
So in the press conference, or whatever you want to call it, the scrum with Nelson Rodriguez after the draft, when we brought up David Akam's, basically his assets, what he brings, he mentioned a few guys on their team, Daniel Johnson and Luis Solanac, two of them, who he, like, as an aside, both have underrated speed. So they might feel like they have enough assets in the team if they improve at the creative number 10 position to cover the loss of David Akam, right? So whatever step up they take from that creative spot, they can then cover parts of what they lose in Akam to, as an overall, be a better team.
Yeah, and I also think you mentioned kind of his contract in the last couple of years. It was probably just time for David Akam, yeah, for the Chicago Fire, to do something a little bit different.
If they do need a winger, Leo Bickelhaupt says, "Hey guys, I have of course been enjoying the show and do appreciate the occasional Minnesota United winger joke. Questions from the North. Under what conditions would you see a 4-4-2 working at Minnesota, and what would be the primary risks of experimenting with that formation? Heath seems to favor the 4-2-3-1, but of course we all want to see both Ramirez and Dunlady on the field. Thanks from St. Paul."
I think the main problem with that is I don't know how good the central midfield
right
is for Minnesota, and that's putting a lot of pressure on the two guys who are going to play there. And
right now, it would seem to be Ibsen and Cronin.
I don't see those two players doing that job.
On top of that, Molino's not really a true winger. He'll probably float around a bunch in that system.
Yeah.
So now they're covering their own positions and Molino's position.
Yeah, it's a challenge, man. Right now, it just feels unbalanced. And to me, the back six is where all the focus should be for the rest of this offseason for them, specifically central midfield. And then I still think center back, but I think their outside backs are not up to snuff. Unless they move Calvo over and Olmsberg is good enough. But he'd have to be a Jack Elliott type, and then you still probably are going to make the playoffs.
You don't think Birch is good enough in MLS right now?
I mean, I think he's fine, but he's certainly not an above-average player.
He was probably on the best defense in the league.
Huh?
2 years ago, he was a starter.
Sure, but so did Axel Schuberg and so did Jared Watts, and both those guys probably aren't starters in MLS anymore. I think that.
Whoa!
Straight up!
Yikes! Dude.
I don't think they are. Courtney Ford and Tommy Smith, if they play two man back there in the Rapids, they'll be
the
starters.
First of all, they're not. We know that. They're playing three.
And I think they're going to go get another center back. Probably.
You don't think anyone goes out and gets Axel Schuberg and says you can be a starter in this league?
I mean, maybe a team like.
Schuberg?
Maybe a team like Minnesota, and then they're still probably not a player.
Wow. This is just like.
It's called like Minnesota.
I don't agree with anything he just said.
Somebody's got to fill the Bobby Warshaw
hole. Better than
hole.
Courtney Ford.
Yeah.
Who?
Axel Schuberg.
No. Sorry.
I don't know if I agree with that. Courtney Ford's an amazing man. Matt from Atlanta would also love to guarantee that Atlanta becomes the first MLS team to win CCL. Obviously, he's saying that no one will win it this year then.
That's a heartbreaker.
It's getting done this year.
We hope so.
No, I'm not guaranteeing that.
Daniel from Indianapolis noticed that the MLS draft coach picture had Vanny and Marsh sitting next to each other after that playoff spat. I'd love to hear the conversation that might have happened. Rate the level of awkward from 1 to 10.
We talked to Jesse Marsh down at the Combine, in addition to a bunch of MLS coaches. So, like the Bob Bradley interview, those things will be rolling out in the next couple of weeks / month or so. Yeah. Jesse Marsh did address this, but we don't want to tell you what he said. We'll let you listen.
No, we don't. I would like to tell a funny story that they all get together to take that picture. Every coach. Obviously, Ziggy Schmidt was sick, so Bruce Arena once again. Dom Kinnear steps in. They all stood there for about 10-15 minutes, and I was off to the side, and I turned to someone. I was like, why are they still up there? And someone came to me later on and said, no one could find Tata. So every single MLS coach was standing around waiting for Tata Martino.
Gotta wait on Tata.
And I'm pretty sure he's not in the picture. I'm pretty sure he never showed up.
Yeah. That's like every comment on all the –
that's class.
Yeah. So
that's class.
There you go. Trevor J. Moore. How do you guys evaluate what Chicago Fire received for Cam Lindsay after Lindley?
Yep.
He wrote it wrong. After seeing how much teams valued top five picks in the draft, which was 175 to 200K in allocation money, that one from the legend Trevor J. Moore.
I think that's a tough one for them because it seemed pretty clear that Lindley did not want to sign with them. It makes sense. You know, you have Schweinsteiger, you have Dax. He's not getting into that team at this time. He wants to have an opportunity to play. He may get that opportunity in Orlando. So
you get Rafael Ramos and 100K.
Right. If you can't sign him, then you get what you can. And the Rafael Ramos thing was, I think, just like you look at their roster and you say, okay, the only expendable guy that we actually would want based on salary, based on profile, age-wise, is Rafael Ramos. And, you know, Polster is your starter, and Ramos can play good minutes for you if he has to. And if you get in a tough spot, maybe Polster could play a right midfield if it's like a three-man central midfield.
Well, I just think Polster now, because you trade Lindley and you don't have Mihailovic because of the injury, is in your depth chart at central midfield. That if you have an issue, he goes in there.
Yeah.
So now you need a right back to fill in that spot. And also, Rafael Ramos had good time when he doesn't have red cards and isn't hurt.
He was.
But he's a young player, and he can play in this league.
And 100K helps him.
Aaron Holm wants to know, question, is it better for homegrowns to go to college or get signed by MLS and go play in USL? Not looking for case by by that it's a case-by-case response, but really interested in what you think USL is a good developmental path.
It's a case-by-case.
I don't know how else you answer that other than case-by-case.
I'm sorry to answer it the way you didn't want me to answer it, but it's literally that's why. It's all case-by-case. What do you think that these players can accomplish at different levels? Is he better off, you know, maybe he's really mature and you sign him as a 16-year-old and he's Tyler Adams,
yep.
Or he's not maybe that mature and you think maybe he could use some time maybe away from the family or anything like that. And
or you just don't have a – or you don't have a – or you don't have a spot. You don't have a two-team. You don't have a roster spot. So it's like, well, for now, you need to go get better. You can't contribute to us in the way that you need to earn one of these 30 spots. So –
I think what you need to do is go ask Lucha Gonzalez at FC Dallas, who's the academy director there. Because what we've seen from them over the past couple of years is a couple of different things. We've seen Jesus Ferreira, Brian Reynolds, and Paxton Pomico all sign as 15, 16, 17-year-olds for Go College. They don't have a two team, so they haven't seen really any professional playing time. They still play sometimes with the U teams. But then we see a guy like Brian Padilla, who was the best player on their GIA Cup team last year, and he's actually went to Maryland. He didn't get a contract with the professional team. Now, I don't know if he's maybe he's not as good as those other players. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I haven't seen enough from Ferreira Reynolds. I know Padilla is really, really good. He scored the goal against Real Madrid in that tournament, but they sent him to Maryland instead of signing him. So, I mean, I think it's all case by case.
Well, there you go. You got
did
the
not
exact
answer the
answer
way
you
wanted
didn't
it
want
to.
It.
Sorry about that.
We got a great question here. Compliments to start. Great interview with Bob Bradley. Thank you. It's a long email. The purpose of it is that we've had a lot of different coaches in the U.S., and this fan doesn't feel that we've seen the best or enough from Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore, and that they shouldn't be considered cornerstones or starters from here on out.
On the U.S. national team.
Yeah, he says, in Bob's, so look at the end of the day, response, whatever the reasons, the USMNT failed to qualify for the World Cup. Whatever you want to say about Michael, Jozy, and anyone else about their professionalism off the field and after that loss, the point is that Michael and Jozy have been two of the foundational elements that this losing, listless team were built around throughout this period. It's not youth. It's not laziness. It's a mystery. And it's one we don't need to try and solve anymore. Michael might be around for 2022, but he's already 30, and despite his beastly beep test legendness, probably isn't going to be doing that at a level where building a national team around him makes sense. As to Jozy, keeping him in the starting lineup pins us to a two-forward system that impinges on any way on Pulisic, then he should be benched. He goes on to say it doesn't matter what they did with TFC. That's great. But the U.S. national team, they should not be a cornerstone of that program anymore.
I don't think that – cornerstone's a tough word. Because cornerstone really does imply that it's now and long-term into the future. I think it would be silly and misguided to throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. Like, there are players, Michael Bradley certainly one of them, that have a big role to play in this transition. And now you have to figure out how to sell them on being that part in that transition. Because they may not have another World Cup in them. Or they may have another World Cup in them. You have no idea. And in the next 4 years, a lot of things could happen. Jozy Altidore could be on form. He could just age well. He could his body could be in a good place. Michael Bradley could be the same thing. You may need a leader. But like turning it all over to 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds may sound like a good idea, may sound exciting, may be something that gets you riled up as a fan. But ultimately, the U.S. national team and every national team, I think, is like a legacy program in which generations have to either pass it on to the next one or give the other ones the runway to prepare. I think this next generation needs a real runway to help them prepare. And that means that you have some guys stick with the program. That means you have some guys help them transition into being the leaders of this national team. And yeah, is Michael going to have this follow him around forever? Is Jozy going to have it follow him around forever? No doubt, that's a lesson that they could probably help these young guys understand. Like, there's value in that too, despite how pissed off and disappointed so many of us are. So, look, is the whole team going to come back? Nah, no way. But should we sit around and say Michael and Jozy and these guys that have accomplished a stupid amount in international soccer and world soccer and club soccer don't deserve to have a seat at the table? To me, that's crazy.
So this is the nicest compliment we've ever gotten. Gabe says, just wanted to say that I loved your last episode. Loved the little side riffs and the comedy value. Loved the intensity towards the end. Good stuff as always. It felt like an open wide for some soccer-esque at times. Ooh. In the best way possible.
Keep it up.
Best podcast in U.S. soccer circles of all time. This is where we enter the let's bash on Ben portion.
Great.
Nice.
We have permission.
Sweet.
Okay. Hey, thanks for mentioning Eric Lehi like I asked. However, Ben the Research Bear attempted to stick to his brand by claiming he didn't know what you were talking about because it wasn't MLS, then specifically mentioned it was an FA Cup game, thus implicitly admitting he at least watched the highlights because only a serious fan would know it was an FA Cup match. So some advice for Ben, live your brand, don't lie about it, .. fraud.
Hashtag fraud.
How's that feel, Ben?
Sorry that I am on Twitter and every single American soccer reporter tweets out whatever happens in America, whatever American player does abroad, so I can't really avoid it.
You ready for some more?
So it sounds like you need to adjust your brand on Twitter.
Yeah.
No, like it sounds like American soccer.
Sounds like you need to live your
need
brand.
To stop.
Everybody must adhere to Ben's brand.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what I'm hearing right now.
Yeah, basically
okay.
Everyone's right. Just
everybody adhere to Ben's brand.
Ben has been getting a hard time about his guarantees. I think the rest of the ETR team is being a bit unfair and should stop pressuring Ben. The ETR team needs to realize Ben really put himself out there in 2016 only to fail on epic proportions and is still recovering. For him to guarantee the Sounders had 0% chance of making the playoffs and then for the Sounders to not only make it but then win MLS Cup, can you imagine the embarrassment? His guarantee was the lead-in for articles around the world and the ETR staff should have taken a minute to try and understand what the humiliation must have felt like. Do you ever wonder why he's incapable of saying anything positive about the Sounders, especially Christian Roldan? It's because he's still healing. And after hearing this, he'll make some quip about shots on goal, losing 2017 MLS Cup, or another snide remark. But it's okay. We understand. We can take it. Ben, you just need time. Get well soon. Sounders fans everywhere.
You have nothing to say here, Ben, because he basically predicted anything that you might say.
Ben is cracking
yeah.
up.
We did send Ben to an inpatient Twitter embarrassment facility after that debacle. He has healed and recovered.
Why is no one has retweeted in a while?
Yeah.
Really? You're getting retweets for a long time?
Well, our friend Jess Guard retweeted it. Used to retweet it like every month.
Just to get it back out
there. Just to resurface it. We might have to go back and find that on Extra Time Radio and retweet that for you, just to keep the brand strong.
I don't hate the Sounders. Just I just find it funny to troll them.
We got two more emails. One from the legend himself, Bill Carroll, Red Bull Section 132. The Cali Classico is over. Take it from someone who knows, a Red Bull supporter. All diehard Red Bull supporters will say, our number one rival is DC, but our team and every team throughout the league is driven by the casual fan. Our biggest game of the year is when we play NYCFC because the casual fan sells out the stadium. The same will happen with Galaxy LAFC match. This is also something I worry about with the U.S. missing the World Cup and those fans not showing up. He thought Bobby would be here, so he then proceeded to say, what do you guys think? And, Bobby, don't say something crazy like you did last week. In parentheses, El Seno is one of the better players in the league.
El Seno take is a legendary take.
The Seno take, I was listening to that, and I just couldn't believe what he was saying. And I wanted to, like, throw my phone.
Bobby.
Because I would have just been, like, going. I mean, you guys went fine in. But, like, I would have been going, like, the same amount.
Bobby's got some interesting takes.
Yeah,
some of which I agree with, some of which I just did not
disagree with.
So,
Bill had an
more.
Interesting.
Well, this is all, first of all, this is all great. This is what he was saying is also classic because Bobby doesn't believe
in
number 10s. So, why is he talking about who the best number 10 is?
That's
we
amazing.
Will not revisit El Seno. We will not do it.
But he proceeds to finish with, Bobby, you're not Simon. He would say something crazy like that, and we'd all say he was brilliant. You say something crazy like that, and we all say you're crazy. Hmm.
A lot of people said Simon was crazy.
I remember a lot of people saying Simon was brilliant.
Bill Carroll is a noted Simon acolyte from his days of, you know, paying off bets in the parking lot of Red Bull Arena over his support. So that's a different perspective.
Last one is a congratulations, a thank you, a props to Renee in Norway, who we read his email a few weeks ago about how Ola Kamara said on a podcast in Norwegian that he would potentially – The podcast host would potentially do a live show from New York if he moved to a more central team like L.A., New York, or Orlando, which clearly has happened. He also, in the same email, the same podcast, when asked about whether he had any friends in Norway that he'd like to see come to MLS, Ola Kamara said, Joe Inge Berget, the player who came to NYCFC. So Renee said, told you, Congratulations, Renee.
Congratulations, Renee. You are out here just seeing MLS moves before they happen. Like I said, go transfer market. Look for out-of-contract players who are starters in that league for good teams, and you can probably bet that MLS clubs
basically
are scouting
we'd be
them
saying
and having
do
discovery.
His job so that you
I mean,
can
I've already done it
too.
A bunch. I predicted Brigitte. Internally, I'll show you the DMs. I'll show you the DMs later on, Dave. That's it for us. We'll see you next time, everybody.